From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Our first guest this morning started his term as Illinois' next State Superintendent of Education late last month. Tony Sanders succeeds outgoing State Superintendent Carmen Ayala, who retired after serving in the position since 2019. If the phrase State Superintendent Sanders sounds familiar to you, you're not wrong. Tony's father, Ted Sanders, was State Superintendent in the 1980s. Before his new position, Sanders had been Elgin School District U46's super since 2014. That is the second largest school district in the state, behind only the Chicago Public Schools. Notably, he's credited with helping launch a play-based all-day kindergarten program, eliminating U46's structural deficit, and growing its dual language program. In order to make our schedules line up, we taped this conversation earlier today, so we're not taking your calls live, but let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. Okay, here now is my conversation with Tony Sanders. State Superintendent Tony Sanders, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for making the time to be with us today.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
I want to begin by talking about the pandemic. There, by some measures, I've seen that students lost perhaps a decade of academic progress. What is Illinois doing to help those students who might have fallen behind to catch up?
It's a great question. So a lot of things that the State Board started before I began here. Number one was tutoring for students. They began offering school districts the opportunity for before and after school tutoring through some private services that is available to all school districts. That's something in my prior role as a superintendent of a local school district that we were taking advantage of. And then also, we can't neglect the social emotional needs of kids. And we certainly know that the pandemic took its toll on students, not just academically, but socially and emotionally. In response to that, the state set up these trauma-informed hubs, basically, across the state to try to train teachers on restorative practices, on trauma-informed teaching. And on top of that, the governor has recently announced his Behavioral Health Transformation Initiative, where we're working very closely with the Department of Children and Family Services and the Department of Human Services and the Illinois Juvenile Justice Authority, really trying to figure out better ways to serve the mental health needs of all kids. And so those are some of the activities that are ongoing across the state of Illinois.
We've seen reports recently of, I mean, there are children who deal with all kinds of tough stuff, and I'm sure you saw that in Elgin, but particularly during and since the pandemic, really a broadening of this rise of depression and other mental health problems among teenagers. Is that something you saw in Elgin? What do you do about that from a state perspective?
It is. And honestly, I think it certainly existed before the pandemic. I think the pandemic just exacerbated the issue. I think we're starting to be more cognizant and recognizing mental health needs of students more now on the backside of the pandemic that we probably should have been recognizing a little bit better even before the pandemic. And I think it is critical that we continue to address the social emotional needs of kids, that we make sure the teachers understand how to best meet the needs of kids in the classroom, not just academically, but socially and emotionally, that we continue to invest dollars in counselors and social workers and the things that school districts need to meet the needs of kids, and also to take care of our adults. We have to recognize that the pandemic did not just affect the kids. It also affected our classroom teachers and our principals and even superintendents. And so recognizing that it's okay to talk about mental health, even as adults, and seek out help whenever the adults need help as well.
That's a great point, because we've had a conversation on this show about the teacher shortage, and it's not just teachers, right? It's all kinds of professionals in school settings. And I think as of October of last year, there were 3,500 unfilled positions across the state. What is Illinois doing to address this?
Well, I think there's several things. The governor's announced a $70 million investment if the legislature goes along with this for this year to invest in teacher pipeline, really targeting those resources to the school districts that have the greatest number of vacancies across their systems, which is a really targeted way of getting dollars into the districts that really need it. Just to give you an example of what we were doing in U46 before this initiative was announced by the governor, we started up a program to allow any school bus driver, any teacher's aide, paraeducator, any educational support professional that wanted to become a teacher we were providing their tuition reimbursement so that they could go back to school and work towards becoming a teacher. And on the backside, we just asked for a 5-year commitment to the profession within the school district if they agreed to do that. It's those outside of the box thinking that we need across the state to encourage people to not just go into teaching, but also come up with ways to retain the teachers that are currently in their classrooms.
I want to ask more about the state finances when it comes to education. That's going to be a big part of your role is interfacing between the General Assembly and the Pritzker administration. The General Assembly, of course, controls the purse strings in Illinois. Sticking with that topic of COVID that I began with, though, there was federal relief money that was handed out. That is, I understand, set to expire in 2025. Will Illinois continue to be able to fund school systems at the level it had with that money going away?
Well, I think the school districts that received the lion's share of these funds really need to be preparing over this next year to make sure that anything that they've invested in is sustainable on the backside, and making budgetary adjustments locally as they need to ensure that whatever they're doing is sustainable. At the state level, certainly I'm not that steeped in the budgeting process yet. I'm just now learning it in this new role. But certainly, I will continue to advocate for the state's investment in the evidence-based funding formula moving forward. It's something that I actively sought whenever there was a proposed change back in 2014 to 2017. I was part of the negotiations team to try to get that bill passed, and it's something that I think the state needs to continue its commitment to.
And let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're speaking with the new State Superintendent of Education, Tony Sanders. Before that, he was the superintendent of the school district in Elgin, which I believe is the second largest in the state behind the Chicago Public Schools. U46 was the name of that district, or the number of the district. And you've been in the role, I think, what, a month now? When I was asking you the budget question, you say you're still learning that process. I just want to remind listeners that you are still relatively new to the role. But on
Yeah,
that
you
topic,
actually
there
you
are.
doubled my time. You
Go
actually doubled
ahead.
my time. I've been
No,
in for
two weeks. All right.
2 weeks and 1 day.
All right. Well, maybe you found the bathrooms in the administrative offices there.
I have.
There are these outside education advocacy groups, Stand for Children Illinois, Advance Illinois. They're calling for a $550 million increase, half a billion dollar increase in the state's education budget. They say that's the minimum needed. What do you think about that?
So even before becoming state superintendent, I argued against that premise. When we passed the evidence-based funding formula, we asked for a commitment of the state for $350 million every year over year. The state's done pretty well at remaining true to that promise. I'm interested in the long-term viability and sustainability of any resources that we give to school districts. So as a district leader, I advocated for 350 million, but no more. And as a state leader, I will continue to advocate for the 350 million, but no more. I think we need to continue to make sure that whatever the state invests is sustainable and reliable in the long run. And so that's my interest.
Another issue that is on the minds of a lot of parents these days, not just these days, but in recent years, is safety at schools, particularly with this rise of gun violence and incidents across the country that we've all been living with for, well, I guess, decades now. How should schools be approaching? Is there something different they should be doing or improving the way they approach child safety amid this rise in gun violence, both from the sort of everyday violence that plagues certain communities across Illinois, as well as these sort of horrible one-off incidents that make national news.
So I think parents need to recognize, and our communities need to recognize that schools remain the safest place for kids to be every day. Yes, there are incidents that happen in schools that make the news that we all become aware of, but it's small in proportion to violence that occurs in our streets and in our communities. So schools still remain the safest place for kids to be. That said, we do, I think across the state, we've made a lot of shifts in public safety and making sure that school districts are aware of the latest, greatest ways of making sure students are kept safe, doing our drills annually, making sure that districts are training on run, hide, fight. So I think we've come a long way across the state of Illinois and across the nation in making sure that kids remain safe. But I don't think we'll ever truly get there until we ensure that we're meeting the social emotional needs of all kids. We have to have a better way of recognizing the needs of kids, the emotional needs of kids on a daily basis, which requires professional development for staff. That's one of the reasons why across the state, we've invested in these social emotional learning hubs where teachers can learn how to recognize instances where a child might be struggling and have the professional learning available to them so that they can take action within their classroom.
How do you keep children from becoming traumatized by this sort of training, by the run, hide, fight that you mentioned?
So I think districts have been doing it very well for the last couple of years without it being an overly traumatic event for students. I know in my former district, we did it across all grade levels, and it never I never had a report from a family saying that it caused any sort of trauma to their child participating in such a drill.
What do you think about the role of police officers in schools?
So I'm a believer in school resource officers for the reason of building relationships with students and having them introduced to positive relationships with police officers early in their lives. There are some issues around school resource officers that need to continue to be addressed. And one of the things, you know, I can speak to what I was doing in School District 246 before joining the state. We were doing a lot of work with our school resource officers around professional development, making sure that our SROs were trained in trauma-informed practices, that they were trained on the needs of specialized students. For example, recognizing when a student might have autism or some other special need, and also building those relationships with kids, trying to determine ways to best build relationships with students. We do need to address some of the other areas that you've probably seen stories about, like the ticketing of kids in schools. I'm a staunch advocate against ticketing kids in schools, but I do believe there is a role for school resource officers in our schools.
Yeah, that was actually something I was going to ask you about. So you're aware of there's obviously legislation being considered in the Illinois House that would stop schools from working with police. What does that say about a school's administration, having served in that role now, that they feel the best way to handle discipline is to outsource it to the local police department?
Well, I think, again, it goes back to this need to make sure that our administrators and teachers are well trained on trauma-informed practices. We've shifted our discipline policies. And before I left U46, the very first year I was in U46, actually 9 years ago, we stopped expelling kids from school. And that's okay. It's good to keep kids in school and to continue to serve kids, even when they make mistakes that historically would have caused them to be expelled. But we have to make sure that our teachers and administrators understand trauma-informed care practices. Kicking kids out of school is not the best first answer. And when administrators felt that that option was taken away from them, which is not accurate, I think what happened was they shifted their resources and asked their SROs to step in and began ticketing students for behaviors that historically they felt would be worthy of a suspension. And that's just a practice that we need to stop. But it's going to take professional learning for our administrators, our teachers, and our school resource officers to be effective.
As you no doubt know, the schools have become a sort of, what would you say, a flashpoint in the culture wars. Every week there are these stories where school administrators and teachers are, you know, being protested, people yelling at school board meetings. We're actually having a conversation on the program later this week about school board candidates across the state sort of espousing right-wing rhetoric. How do you address that? How do you... Or has it been ever thus, right? How do you think about the idea that the schools have become this flashpoint in the so-called culture wars in America?
It saddens me, actually. Schools are apolitical. Schools are places where students go to learn critical thinking skills. This debate over CRT, which some think is critical race theory and others say CRT is culturally responsive teaching, two entirely different things. But unfortunately, they get confused by the general public. And we do want culturally responsive teaching practices within our schools. At the same time, critical race theory is not something that's introduced to students until they are working either on a master's or a doctorate. And so I think it's unfortunate that the general public makes the schools the center of politics when it should not be.
On that note, Illinois has implemented a number of new teaching requirements. There's Black history, Asian history. Some say, particularly in the Republican Party in Illinois, that it's too much. It's too much meddling from the state in what is happening in individual classrooms. How do you think about that?
So I think that our curriculum should uplift every child in the state of Illinois. Before these other bills that you just referenced that were enacted into legislation to teach about African-American history or Asian-American history, for decades, we've had a state law that says that we have to teach about the Irish famine. We've had laws that talk about Mexican deportation. So in terms of curricular mandates, there's about 40 to 50 curricular mandates that have been on the books for years that are appropriate and the right things for kids to be learning. I see no difference with adding these latest curriculum requirements. And I don't even think they should be requirements. I think it's just something that school districts need to do as part of their work, is to make sure that we're uplifting everybody's culture within our curriculum. Who among us doesn't want to see their culture represented in the curriculum?
I guess I'm holding out for the Lithuanian education segment. State Superintendent Tony Sanders, thank you for making the time to be with us today on the 21st Show.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for the invitation.
More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.